Maxine Prose is the author of 20 works of fiction. Her novel, Blue Angel, was a finalist for the National Book Award. Her most recent works of nonfiction include the highly acclaimed Anne Frank, The Book, The Life, The Afterlife, and Reading Like a Writer. The recipient of numerous grants and honors, including a Guggenheim and a Fulbright, Prose, who graduated from Radcliffe, is a former president of Penn American Center and a member of the American Academy of Arts and Letters. She's also a visiting professor of literature at Bard College. Francine makes New York City her home. Welcome, Francine, and thank you so much for joining us on the Book Report.
Oh, thank you, too. It's a pleasure.
I've always wondered how a writer chooses their book's opening line. Yours is so magnificent. Quote, "Last night I visited a club in Montparnasse where men dress as women and the women as men. Papa would have loved it."
Well, that narrator is based very loosely on Brassai, the photographer, and he took a lot of pictures in a club which was really called Le Monocle, the Monocle. And I knew in the novel it was going to be the Chameleon Club, and Brassai wrote letters back to his parents in Hungary. So that part of the novel, or that voice, is based very loosely on the letters he wrote. And I thought, how funny, you know, a young artist in Paris writing back to his middle-class, proper, staid parents in Hungary about going to a cross-dressers club. So, you know, the minute I had that line, I knew I had it.
When you're writing first lines in a novel, do they sort of pop into your brain fully formed, or do you write down 10 and then sort of one comes to the front? I've always wondered, since it's so meaningful to set the tone.
Usually the first line is all I have. I mean, a lot of times it really does start with the first line, and in that case it did. The last line is more difficult, but the first, I've sort of, you know, as soon as I've got that, I can go forward.
Can you give us a brief overview of the story?
Mm-hmm. Well, it takes place in Paris between 1924 and 1944, and a lot of it does take place in this cross-dressers club in Montparnasse, and it follows a group of characters who are all very closely connected, and at the center of the novel is a woman who historically was named Villette Morris, but I call her Lou Villar, who was a French athlete, a professional race car driver, and in 1935, the French government took away her license to compete because she was a cross-dresser. And Hitler somehow found out about this, invited her to be his guest at the Berlin Olympics. She went, she was Hitler's guest, she came back to France spying for the Germans, and she became a worker for the Gestapo when the Germans invaded Paris, and then she was assassinated by the resistance in 1944. So that was the center of the book, really. And then as the book got larger and I was writing it, I realized I had to start way back earlier and go, because I wanted a picture of Paris when it was very, very bright and lively and all these artists and entertainers and great talents were there before it got dark during the occupation.
I've read that you were considering writing this as a nonfiction, yet you chose the novel instead. Why?
Well, for one thing, Violette Morris's story is such a crazy story that I thought no one would believe it if I wrote it as fiction. And that was part of the... But it was... I mean, I knew it wasn't going to be as much fun to do it as nonfiction. But there were so many real people involved. I mean, there's a character loosely based on Henry Miller. There is the Brassai character. Lou Villar does have her roots in a real person. So it could have gone either way, but it was just much more fun to do it this way.
And the Brassai character and the Henry Miller character were actually friends at the time?
Oh, yeah, they were very close. In fact, they wrote books about each other. They rambled around Paris together. And they were both very much nocturnal beasts. So a lot of the pictures Brassai took came during their rambling all-night walks through Paris.
You would have liked to have been a fly on the wall.
Absolutely. I mean, I think everyone secretly would have loved to have lived in Paris in the 1930s and 20s. So I'm among them.
Me too. So many characters have their own voice in the novel. Gabor, the photographer, Lionel Mayne, the journalist. But you made the decision not to allow Lou to have her own voice. Why?
Well, you know, one of the things the novel is about is the mystery of evil, really. I mean, I didn't realize that when I started out. I just was going to tell a story. But as I began to work on it, I thought, okay, that's what it is. And I was very intent on keeping that mystery. I mean, since then, you know, some readers get it, and some readers say, gee, she should have had her own voice. We should have understood why she did the things she did. Well, there's some reasons that I could trace as to why she did what she did. But finally, you can't understand why someone behaved that way. So I wanted to keep that element of mystery and distance around her.
Yes, in that line of thinking, you've said that she was invited to Berlin to meet Hitler, and she wonders if the Germans wanted her to race for them. She says, would a patriotic French woman mistreated by her country consider driving for Germany, if only to show her deluded homeland that it made a mistake? Are we supposed to feel slightly disappointed for Lou?
Well, I think her character excites, I hope, a whole range of emotions. I mean, there's something sympathetic about her. I meant there to be something sympathetic, and yet she did really terrible things. So she's complicated the way most people are complicated, but more intensely complicated than most people.
We're speaking with Francine Prose on The Book Report.
What was it like to write dialogue for Hitler?
It was so much fun. It was, well, you know, part of it was kind of borrowed. There's a book called Hitler's Table Talk, and Martin Bormann wrote down everything Hitler said at dinner for, I don't know, over a four-year period. Shatteringly banal. You can hardly believe. And a lot of what he talked about was his diet and his vegetarianism and his preference for a kind of nut cutlet his mother used to make. So I could just put that, you know, change it, of course, but put it directly in the novel. I knew what Hitler said at dinner.
Wow. Your description of Hitler was very hard for me to read. Quote, could some German scientist have found a way to install a high wattage light bulb inside the Führer's head? He emitted 10 times the radiance of a normal human being, and his eyes were 100 times brighter than the cloudy lenses which ordinary humans peered. Lou had never seen a man exude such simple modesty combined with such charisma. Wow.
Well, of course, that's what point of view means, right? I mean, if you're looking at it from the point of view of someone, Lou, who thinks he's a hero, who thinks he's going to promise her a whole new life, who thinks he's going to recognize her in a way that she hasn't been recognized because she's been so disappointed and mistreated, so he is a hero. And part of what I was trying to get at was how he did look to these masses of Germans who followed him, and French people as well.
It was hard to read still, but
it wasn't my point of view, that's for sure.
Lou is a woman who cut off her own breasts in order to be a better race car driver. For such a person, I don't think it was really a leap to find her inflicting torture on her own countrymen.
Well, it's not exactly clear to me. You know, she did it in theory so that she could fit more comfortably behind the wheel of the race cars. But, you know, so much less was known then about the trans community and gender and so forth. And who knows exactly why she did it. I mean, she dressed like a man. She looked in many ways like a man. So I'm sure there was a mixture of motives behind it when she did it.
I loved how Lionel Mayne, as his last news assignment in France, was sent to cover an execution at Versailles. A murderer was to be beheaded on the guillotine. Was this perhaps your commentary on what was ahead for Europe?
Well, yeah, but also, you know, the clip of the execution is on YouTube. You can find it. I mean, I don't suggest anybody actually look for it because it's so horrifying, but it's out there. So I was, you know, a lot of the research I did for the book I actually did on YouTube because you can find amazing news clips and occasional photography from the period. And I found it on YouTube, and I went, oh, it has to go in the novel for that reason. But sure, I mean, the guillotine runs all the way through the novel. I mean, there's a scene where Picasso makes a little drawing of a guillotine that Lionel craves. So, and the guillotine was my way, or one way, of talking about French culture. I mean, French culture is so romanticized and so glorified. Well, as Picasso says, they did invent the guillotine as well. So it's the other side of it.
I see. Of course, the book takes on anti-Semitism. You write, of the 76,000 French Jews who'd been deported, only 2,500 came home. Was that factual?
Oh, yeah. All the facts in that part were true. Horrifying, but true.
At the end of the book, Lionel recalls a reunion with Gabor. They are walking and come across a snake swallowing a frog. Gabor says to Lionel, take a look. You think only humans are cruel? That really, for me, reinforced the brutality that surrounds us.
I saw that in my garden. I had no idea how I was going to end the book. And then I was in my garden in upstate New York, and I saw a snake with half of a frog sticking out of its jaws. And the snake couldn't move. The snake had unhinged its jaws, but the frog was too big. And it took forever. I mean, I watched it for 10 minutes. I called my husband. He came for 10 minutes. He took a photograph. And we knew we couldn't save the frog. I mean, it was beyond that. And then I went back to my study, and I thought, oh, okay, I have an end for my novel. So it was, I guess, fortuitous, not for the frog.
What's next for you? Are you already at work on a new novel?
I'm working on a new novel, yes.
Any hint as to what subject matter?
It's about a group that performs children's theater. It's about a theater group.
Okay. Any final thoughts about Lovers at the Chameleon Club?
No, I have to say I was very pleased by the way it was received, and I'm still getting emails and letters from readers that make me very happy.
Well, it's one of my favorite books that I've read this year. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, too.
To hear a sampling of Lovers at the Chameleon Club, check bookreportradio.com, archived shows, week of May 24th, 2014.